This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 1st of September, 2019. How about 2021? Let's fast forward to there. Before I get to the market wrap and into the podcast, I really need to highlight a really exciting event we have up today. I wish we'd highlighted it yesterday, but hopefully we'll have it available for you on recording soon after the fact. And that is, we have a great conversation up for everyone as we have invited the former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, Hugo Lawrence, who will be talking with our CIO, Stan Jakobsen, and Lester Chan, our head of wealth management out in Greater China. A fantastic figure, and it should be a great conversation, especially the timing. I think is actually a bit of a coincidence here, but certainly something worth tuning into. And you can do so by signing up at webinars.saxo. And again, hopefully we'll have that conversation recorded for those that aren't able to make the session. We're having a massive interest in this and have well over 1,000 signups. So be aware of that. Okay, let's get back into the market wrap. What's going on? We've talked about, as we look on slide 3 of today's slide deck, the fact that the S&P rally here has accelerated beyond trend, and that at times in the past, this has indicated that we're sort of getting into a narrow window that could see a lot more price volatility two-way. We saw a bit of selling off yesterday. Some of that may have been some end-of-month rebalancing. We saw some suspicious type of price action in FX. It looks like end-of-month type rebalancing flows. But we bounced back a bit overnight. And Peter, part of that is due to the big turnaround in sentiment in China, I suppose.
Yeah, there was a big turnaround in the sentiment on China. And we'll talk about that when we get to the earnings slide, because it's coupled to the earnings from Meituan and NetEase. But I like you try to induce a little bit of a drama in equities, because it is still quite, you know, quiet, I would say, and maybe it's quietness before the storm hits. But before we get to that point, John, I want to mention that I think the key story in the market right now is India versus China. You can see in our theme basket, the performance overview on slide 3, you can see India is now up 6% for the month, 36% year to date. And you have China being the opposite basket, being down the most, 13% for the year. And I think that a lot of it is the outflow out of China. But I also think that a lot of global investors now realizing that India potentially is looking into a couple of decades with a new strategic focus, both on the investor side, but also geopolitically, because the US is clearly reorienting itself away from the Middle East and into the Southeast Asia region. And I think India, together with Japan, South Korea, and Australia, will form a very important alliance between those four countries. And I think if India plays their cards well, they can get tremendous amount of investments and tailwind from US companies and foreign direct investments. So I think India is increasingly looking like a very, very interesting country. And it, by the way, is said to be the fastest growing economy this year. But fast forward, John, slide 4, I think, is the one you sort of indirectly alluded to with your comment on the S&P 500. We are in the second longest rally since 1999, with a drawdown of 5% or less. I've drawn a trend line. It happened to become an extended line, but I draw the line from around early 2010 until today, just to get a feeling of where are we on the MSCI world relative to the log trend we have had over the past 10 years. And you can see we are significantly now moving beyond that trend line. And I think that combined with the very low volatility we're seeing and the small drawdowns is, you know, dynamics that I expect suddenly could change very abruptly. I don't know what the trigger will be, but I think I think investors should prepare now for a rainy day, either, you know, rebalance some of their portfolios, not so many growth stocks, prepare either for an interest rate shock in some sorts. But anyway, just, you know, basically think about that we could get a significant correction.
Yeah, and you've talked about tail hedges using market maker stocks, so we can revisit that at some point as well. And then I just want to briefly head over to a couple of U.S. data points I think are quite interesting and worth mentioning. So we saw one of the U.S. home price series out yesterday, and we see yesterday that you can see these on slide 5, where we're seeing a 19%+ increase year on year in U.S. home prices from levels that never actually dipped below zero. So unlike the big gains we saw post global financial crisis, when home prices were falling minus 15% and more, this time we're adding on top of the lack of a decline here. So this is price advances that are at a greater clip than during the great housing bubble that triggered the GFC. Of course, a lot of that was linked to leverage in the banking system, but nonetheless, it shows you what is happening in terms of asset prices running out of control. And on the right, worth mentioning, we talked about the U.S. Consumer Confidence Survey and whether it would sort of corroborate the Michigan Sentiment Survey. It did directionally. It was a big drop. Actually, if you take out the two pandemic months, it was the largest drop since 2011. So about the worst drop in 10 years ex pandemic. But look at the Michigan sentiment number, actually worse. And I have this on slide 5 as well. The blue line is the Michigan sentiment number, actually worse than it was at the worst levels during the pandemic. And it looks to me like, looking at where it turned in previous cycles, that the Michigan sentiment survey could be the more leading one. So I think for my money, looking and tracking the Michigan sentiment survey. And then we saw U.S. yields, however, managing to claw a little bit higher. And I saw dollar yen poking well up above 110 this morning. And I thought, well, there must be a pretty big move in U.S. yields. It wasn't so big, but looking over in Europe, Althea, we saw a pretty big move in fixed income there. German Bund yields up 6 basis points on some comments from a couple of ECB officials. And I think that was probably behind some of that yen weakness. What's your take on what's going on in Europe here?
Yes, John. Well, before Holtzman and Knopf did some hawkish remarks, we had the CPI figures coming out at 3% in year-on-year in the euro area. And that drove European government bond yields slightly higher. But the comments of Holtzman and Knopf were the ones that actually accelerated the sell-off in European government bonds, and the worst performers yesterday were actually Italian BTPs. The 10 years yields on Italian BTPs rose 10 basis points and closed at 0.7% and broke even above their moving a 200 days moving average. I just want to highlight something interesting that amid the sell-off yesterday morning, Italy issued 5 and 10 years BTPs, and the demand was quite massive. The bid to cover was well above 1.3 times for both issuances. And as you can see in slide 6, the yield on 10 years BTPs came out in the auction at 0.67%, well below where actually BTPs closed during the day. So what I'm saying here, John, is that despite there has been some hawkish demand, despite we see skyrocketing inflation, there is still wide support for European sovereigns. And also we cannot forget that it's very unlikely that next week the ECB will make any announcement surrounding the pandemic purchases, because they have just put in place the symmetric inflation targeting, which enables them to be more accommodative. On that note, just very quickly, Germany yesterday announced that is going to issue 30 years bunds. And that issuance is going to be incredibly interesting, because any volatility in the European sovereign space will come out from very long-term maturities such as this one. So definitely something to watch out there.
That is interesting. And staying on a European theme, we're lucky to have Christopher Dimbeck, our macro strategist in France, with us today. And you're focused very much on the political situation, of course, heading into the German election, which I actually want to start with, just because you passed around an interesting poll this morning showing that the SPD, I mean, just incredible rate of gain here and rate of loss for the CDU-CSU bloc. Is this an outlier, or is it just confirming a trend?
No, clearly we see the momentum is on the side of the SPD. It was quite clear, actually, it has happened, the positive momentum for the center-left SPD started in the mid-end of July, exactly at the same time than the flood crisis in Germany. And we see that the candidate, Mr. Scholz, was clearly much better, much more appreciated, higher popularity than any other candidates. What is interesting as well is that you might remember in a few months ago, there were a lot of talks regarding the fact that we could have a green chancellor in Germany. We see, according to most of the polls, that this is now a very remote possibility. So I think the fight, obviously, the race is still very open, and we have seen a lot of volatility in the voters' preference. But as a matter of fact, the fight will be mostly between the center-left SPD and the center-right CDU. But the momentum is clearly, and it has been, on the side of the SPD in the coming over the past weeks. So I would say that few months ago, it could be clearly impossible to imagine to have the SPD chancellor, but I would say it is getting much, much higher probability.
Right, and we'll have to consider what the implications of that are for Europe, the attitude towards fiscal and so on, as we've discussed before, but it's an interesting development. Now, you've also got to focus today on the French presidential election, which I assume is coming down again to, is it going to come down again to a Macron-Le Pen runoff in the second round?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, the French presidential election will only take place in 8 months, but we have already, according to my latest estimate, we have already 35 declared candidates. But when we look at most of the polls, this is quite clear that it will be mostly a replay of 2017, with a second round between President Emmanuel Macron and the far-right leader Marine Le Pen. Third candidate, which is a former Sarkozy minister, Mr. Xavier Bertrand, hoped to challenge a little bit this replay of 2017, but is in most of the poll is far behind, around 15%, 16% of votes in the first round. And to give you a comparison, Macron and Le Pen are between 22-24%. So I know it is still very early days, but personally, I don't see who at the moment could really challenge this second round between Macron and Le Pen. But I would say that it is a less risky election than in 2017, especially because the far-right leader, Le Pen, I clearly gave up on the idea to exit the euro area. So she wants to have a much more traditional and orthodox economic policy. So I would say this is, at the moment, clearly it is a less risky election than in 2017 for the market.
Okay. Interesting also that you put up on your slide 7, the Macron approval ratings and consumer confidence. So assuming that, you know, given how far away this election is, I guess there could be some risk of a significant slide in confidence, and that would shift the election odds. But for now, looking like it's in Macron's hands. All right, just briefly to wrap up on FX, we have Eurodollar. It dipped back below 118. It's slightly above as I'm talking here this morning. Again, some of that price action yesterday looking a bit like it may have been end of month flows. But I think the key point here is that we've seen this latest rally attempt off of that Jackson Hole speech from Fed Chair Powell. So I'm calling 117.50 the key dividing line here for the price action. So we need to get back below that to suggest that Eurodollar is still at risk of falling lower. And in the meantime, I would really like to see a move back above 119 to establish that we're in a proper downtrend for the dollar. On the FX board readings, you can see that the dollar is slipping into negative territory, the yen even more so. Sterling has been really surprising on the negative side. I would have thought the rebound in sentiment could have supported sterling now. I have a big question mark hovering over that currency, given we still have relatively high rate expectations, etc. And then we're seeing a comeback in the smaller G10 currencies with the CAD a bit accepted there. And I can get to that in another podcast because we need to roll on forward with what you have for us. It looks like, is this a new theme basket I see in the making here on slide 10, Peter?
Yeah, so what we're looking at here is that, you know, we have this upcoming webinar with Steen on the situation post-Afghanistan. And it's in many ways, it's potentially a new world, and lots of talks in the EU about the position of the US inside NATO. What is NATO's role? It's definitely not nation building. There's a lot of fatigue. There's discussions about how many refugees that will hit Europe's continent from Afghanistan. There are some numbers have been put out there. It's you know, 10 to 30,000 refugees are leaving Afghanistan. I can't remember whether it was on a daily or on a weekly basis since May, but there is a lot of people on the move. And the reason why we're doing this, you know, securities list of 25 defense contractors is basically that the talks are inside the EU is that Europe needs to be more self-reliant with the US backing away as the world's policeman. And that means that probably Europe will have the, you know, less benefits of a US military umbrella. And even Denmark, I listened to an interview the other day with our foreign, former foreign minister of Denmark, which has typically been in the more pacifist part of the political spectrum. And even he said, I think we need to spend more money on military in Denmark and in the EU as a whole. So we're looking at this list of these companies. Just, we know it's, maybe that's a disclaimer. I know in these ESG times, it's probably not the most political correct thing to, you know, provide a list here with the military companies. But nevertheless, in the world of investing, some people are less inclined to do ESG and is happy to do some of these, you know, investments. So we just put it out there for inspiration. These are the companies we think give you the best potential exposure to this theme if European companies are ramping up their military expenditures. And as you can see on the five-year chart as well, on slide 10, you can see that the defense stocks did okay in terms of outperformance relative to the MSCI World in 17, 18, and 19 during the Trump years, and when he was drumming up this idea that the EU had, you know, the EU countries had to do more. And then the pandemic basically flipped the trade. And, you know, there's just been such a extraordinary rally in technology stocks. So maybe it's time for defense companies to come back, John.
All right. An interesting theme, as you point out. And I would wonder, just to add a twist on that, I would wonder if there could be a relative play as well, looking at those geographies where there may be an attempt with the U.S. pulling away from so-called nation building, as Biden called it, to rebuild at a relative pace that's faster than what we're seeing in the U.S., although some of these U.S. companies, I guess, could be selling abroad as well. Earnings, a couple bits and pieces, I guess, through the end of this week.
Yeah, I actually want to take the time quickly to just mention that the Meituan that reported 2 days ago and NetEase yesterday, they both surprised the market on the upside. It's lifted sentiment in Chinese equities. The CSI 300 futures were up almost 2%. The Hang Seng Tech Index, which you can see on slide 11, is bouncing back. We're getting close to some of the levels before the hard sell-off last month. So let's see where we go. Our stance is still that there's so much uncertainty around China and the ongoing regulation and crackdown. I think it's pretty telling that almost all the major Chinese companies that I have watched during this earnings season, very few of them, if none almost, are providing an earnings guidance for the rest of the year. And I simply think that we are in an extraordinary period in recent Chinese history in terms of the, you know, what's going on in the private sector and regulation. What will be the future profitability? We have Tencent that is ramping up investments overseas because they know they are constrained in their domestic market, and we don't know fully what this common prosperity, which is the new guiding principle of the Chinese state, what it really means. But one could think that it means lower profit margins overall for Chinese companies because they have to share more of their wealth and their dominance with the broader population. In terms of earnings, this week, the next two really important ones on Thursday is Broadcom and DocuSign. Broadcom is on the side of Nvidia, part of the semiconductor and telecommunication industry. They are siding with Nvidia on their acquisition of Arm Holdings. So I'm curious to see whether they have any thoughts about this merger. And then we have DocuSign, which is one of the growth stocks and investor darlings on the retail side. So there's still plenty of things going on. And just quickly, John, maybe I should mention this fun fact. You can read it in my equity update yesterday, that we had this Fundus Q Metals Group, one of the big iron ore miners in Australia, reporting on Monday. And their net income in dollar terms was almost $11 billion. For digging iron ore out of the ground. And that's the same profit as Visa, one of the most critical payments infrastructure in the world. So who says it's boring in mining?
I won't make that claim. So let's have a look over at the economic calendar today, which heats back up a little bit with the US ADP employment change. I'm curious to see the market reactivity around that, as well as how payrolls shape up. We have these special and pandemic employment benefits expiring here at the beginning of September. Are people scrambling in August to go out and find a job? And we know that the job openings are at record levels. Or is this not something we'll see until the September and or October data round? So curious to see that number ahead of the Friday non-farm payrolls change. The official the official survey, and I'm really more interested in the Friday, August ISM services because of that big dip in sentiment than in the today's ISM manufacturing, where I actually expect it will miss by a point or two relative to the 58.5 expectations, down a point from the actual number in July, because we've seen a couple of pretty weak regional surveys this month, still in expansion, but at weaker decelerating levels. We also have an OPEC Plus meeting today. I don't have a time for that, but of course, this can move the market, and we'll have Ole up tomorrow on tomorrow's podcast to give us a wrap of what unfolded at that meeting with the latest on energy, etc. For today, that's it. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.